Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
You either have grace or you don't.
Read Grace's work in The Spectator and see her recommended reading at gracecurleyshow.com.
She's a nasty woman. She's a really nasty woman.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley, host of the Grace Curley Show.
Grace.
Grace Curley.
Grace!
Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. I'm Taylor Cormier, Grace's producer, filling in once again for Grace Curley. Just about a month till she comes back. We're all excited. We're all waiting. But having fun in the meantime as well. 844-500-4242 if you want to join the conversation today. As always, in the Trump administration, there is a lot to get to today, and we will do that. We've got a lot planned later on in the show. I've got a Bristol County District Attorney candidate, a Republican, joining the show. He's hosting an event tonight along with local Republicans in New Bedford, and I think it's great. It's really historic. This is the first time a Republican has sought the seat of the Bristol County District Attorney's Office in about 50 years, maybe even more. So it's really exciting. I'm glad to see it. And we'll give you some more information about attending that event later tonight on the show this afternoon. And in the meantime, there's so much more to get to, a lot of sound. There's the Supreme Court of the United States is arguing right now a case I'm trying to wrap my head around a little bit. The only people writing about it are these left-wing, you know, NPR, PBS, Axios. And so I can't get a great take on what this case is about because they love to confuse you. But it's basically Louisiana. It's based around this case in Louisiana that's gone up to the Supreme Court where you're not supposed to redistrict congressional districts. You're not supposed to gerrymander based on race. But it seems that they have been doing that in Louisiana, and local officials are arguing that this is necessary because white Democrats aren't voting for black candidates, even if they are Democrats. So they had to get some representation of their own and redistrict, even though you're not supposed to be redistricting based on race. So that what is at stake is the Voting Rights Act is what they're saying, and that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act needs to be completely gutted. Again, I'm not the most educated on it. That's why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today. I'll let the sound cuts be played by another host if they want to get to that. I'm sure it will be a landmark case. And if I had more time today, I would have gotten a guest about it too. But the ruling, I'm sure, will be very interesting once that comes out. But some of the sound that I've heard from Ketanji Brown Jackson and one of the local attorneys general from Louisiana arguing for minority-based districts, it's astounding. I never thought I'd see the day where Democrats are arguing basically for segregation. And that's just what I'm hearing. Those are the sound cuts I've heard. I'll see if we can track them down, Matt, so you can play them off of X. I didn't send them to you via email. I should have. But it's absolutely astounding what I'm hearing. The other story I do want to talk about today, and another one that to read a Politico story is to read a Herman Melville novel. It's voluminous. It's extremely wordy and unnecessary, and usually based in only half-truths. And also based on the fact that they want you to pretend that you're ignorant and you've never, ever heard of a joke before. That is the story when it comes to these quote, "I love Hitler" texts. Leaked messages expose young Republicans' racist chat. It's young GOP group in New York, and there's a Kansas, I think this is kind of a coalition kind of group chat. Leaders of young Republican groups throughout the country worried what would happen if their Telegram chat ever got leaked. Kansas Young Republicans Vice Chair William Hendricks used, used the N-word, but he didn't go hard R, okay? Did not go hard R on the N-word. Whenever they used the N-word, there was always an A or a UH at the end of it. I'm not condoning it, but there is a difference, okay? If we're going to talk semantics, if Politico wants to get down to it and talk semantics, I'm not the most hip guy. I think you know I'm not the most hip guy. But I do know the difference between a hard R N-word and a soft R N-word. I can't believe this is a topic of discussion today. But Politico has made it so. Bobby Walker, vice chair of New York State Young Republicans at the time, referred to rape as epic. This is how Politico is framing all of this stuff. Peter Junta, who at the time was chair of the New York State Young Republicans, wrote in a message sent in June that everyone that votes no is going to the gas chamber. Again, not condoning any of this stuff. But I'm not, you know what? Some of it, yeah, should be condemned. You shouldn't be referring to groups of minorities as watermelon people as they did. That's disgusting. That's racist. And I don't condone that. Absolutely not. But other stuff in here, you're taking this way out of context. Texts and reactions by Peter Junta, Bobby Walker, and Kay Cady, Joe Maligno, Rachel Hope, and Alex Dwyer. "Can we fix the showers? Gas chambers don't fit the Hitler aesthetic," Joe Maligno, who previously identified himself as the general counsel for the New York State Young Republicans, wrote back. "I'm ready to watch people burn now," Annie K. Cady, New York's national committee member, said. And it goes on, this Politico story. Again, it's a lot to muddle through. But I would just say to Politico and anybody that's reading this story and going, "Oh my God, can you believe what these young people are saying?" First of all, I would say comments like this are the result. First of all, they're based mostly in humor, from what I can read. Second of all, this is the result of MSNBC, CNN, PBS, NPR, all of these outlets, and people like Maxine Waters, Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, AOC, Jasmine Crockett, Eric Swalwell, Adam Schiff, any of them. The list keeps going. A result of all of those agencies and people calling Trump supporters Hitler, Nazis, fascists, browncoats, anything of that nature, anything of that ilk. So what happened? These young kids, these young Republicans, young, you know, hopeful future political aspirees, which they probably were burned of that notion in the Politico story that came out yesterday. They played the meme. They not took the bait, but they went for the meme. Okay, they're going to call us that. We'll just joke about it. And that's what they did in a lot of this stuff. If you read through it again, I printed it out, 14 pages of, and what is it, 2,900 pages of chats and boiled down to 14 pages in the Politico story. Again, very much taken out of context in much of this. I don't like the comments about, you know, different people's, you know, the slurs for black people. That's awful. But the other stuff, I'm not going to excuse it, but I'm not going to condemn it either. This is what they did to Trump in 2015 with the Billy Bush tape, Access Hollywood, when he said, you know, you could grab up, you go up to a girl and she'll let you grab her by the bleep and you can do it. They'll let you do anything. It's locker room talk. And these are secret chats, not secret. They're private chats between people who understand their own audience. They know their own people. They know the jokes. They get it. This is different from Jay Jones calling for the assassination of a political rival and for the death of his children. It's completely different.
Oh, Taylor, those are private chats too.
Yeah, they were, but they weren't. They were of a one politician vehemently and plainly calling for the death, the violent death at his own hands of another political rival. And his children. And Democrats aren't pulling back their endorsement of him. This is not the same. There's nothing in these text messages that are calling for the death of anybody specific. They're not calling for political rivals to be killed for their viewpoints. They're joking. Has this Politico reporter, Jason Bieferman and Emily No? Maybe Jason Bieferman skipped out on high school because I can only imagine the bullying that he... This is probably why he wrote this. He probably... You know what? This is Jason Bieferman's revenge on the high school bullies. This is Jason Bieferman getting vengeance for being shoved into a locker every lunch period. Because he was probably bullied so much in high school over that name. And now he's in the shadows typing away. Saying, how can I get these guys back? He was probably in the locker while all of these conversations were going on. I remember conversations in high school. They were jokes. Like, people made Jewish jokes. They made Nazi jokes.
As you get older, the more you realize the high school jokes are a little unhinged, and you're like...
Oh, they are, absolutely. They were funny. Why is it so awful to say something is funny? It's wrong, but it's funny. That's what a joke is. It pushes the envelope of that. I'm a very, very staunch supporter of the First Amendment, especially when it comes to comedy. I love stand-up comedy, comedy of all kinds. I'm not crazy about raunchy comedy, but I don't shame other people who do it. It's not my style, but you want to go for that, fine. Somebody like Don Rickles. These are kind of like Don Rickles jokes. He went after the racial stuff, too. Would Politico have written a story about Don Rickles and his humor and saying that he needs to be completely... and utterly shut out of society because he joked about Nazis and gas chambers and black people. Oh, God, the cuts I could play for you of Don Rickles going after all kinds of races, which is what these texts did. They equated Indian people to being smelly, playing on all kinds of different stereotypes. Don Rickles, RIP, canceled by Politico, in effect, in causal relation to these texts here. Absolutely stupid and ridiculous. And I think that there are a lot of people who's the guy I like from the Daily Wire? Matt Walsh. Saying this is another trap by Democrats. This is you know, January 6th, oh, we've got to denounce January 6th. How many times we've got to bow down before the Democrats in fealty because that was just so wrong. And every time somebody mentions January 6th, we've got to do the sign of the cross and say, oh, God, it was so horrible. But I still support Donald Trump. Or any the very fine people on both sides lie. We've got, just prostrate on the floor. And it's so sorry about that one. But really, I mean, Donald Trump was actually anything of that nature. The Billy Bush tapes. Oh, yeah. What Donald Trump said was it was just so awful. It's enough. Enough of this. We can actually own something and say, you know what? Some of this may be bad, but it's not out of. You know, it's not out of range. It's not out of none of this was sent in just this complete hatred of people on a human level for who they are and what their opinions are. Again, I'll condemn the racial stuff in here, the slurs that were used. But have you heard middle schoolers talk? My house is at a bus stop. And I hear complaints from people up and down my street. They talk in the online forums, you know, the Facebook groups, saying some of you parents really need to talk to your kids. By the way, all white kids. I live in a predominantly white town. All white kids walking home from school using the N-word with a soft R. And that's just how kids talk. It's unfortunate. But who's putting that forward in the culture? Who's promoting that kind of talk? Is it Republicans or Democrats? Let's all take a look at ourselves for a moment. This is stupid. It's ridiculous. I don't know if you've read this. I'd love your thoughts on this Politico story. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. I'm Taylor Cormier, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
More of The Grace Curley Show up next. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show, 844-500-4242. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit PerfectSmiles.com. So Janet Mills entered the Senate race for U.S. Senate in Maine yesterday. The other front runner is Graham. Is it Prattner? Plattner. He is a Bernie Bros supported oyster farmer, U.S. Marine. I don't know too much about him. I don't really follow Maine politics, but you just have to have Bernie Sanders supporting somebody, and that's all I need to know. And Chuck Schumer pushed Janet Mills into the race, too. So, Matt, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
And you can vote in the poll question by going to gracecurlyshow.com. Who would you rather see challenge Susan Collins in a head-to-head Senate race? Bernie Bro, Graham Plattner, or Schumer Shill, Janet Mills?
Janet Mills.
Janet Mills has 48% of the vote.
Oh, so other guy, oyster farmer, has 52%. They'd rather see him. I don't know. I'd be a bit wary of that. I think Maine has probably had just about enough of Janet Mills. I don't see the maybe the anti-Trump, I'm an angry white liberal woman message plays in Maine. I don't know. Maine, you got to tell me. Because that's really all she has going for her. Susan Collins at least kind of appeals to that sect of a voter. She doesn't always vote with Trump. Whenever you need her, Susan Collins isn't there, for Trump at least. We'll be back. Much more to come here on The Grace Curley Show. I'm Taylor Cormier. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's The Grace Curley Show.
508 says, take my senator, please. Is that anti-Native American? No, that's very pro-American. It's pro-Native American. It's pro-American. Get rid of Elizabeth Warren. 844-500-4242 in an electoral sense, okay? I don't want Politico to take my comments out of context here. They will. If they ever write about, they'll never write about me. Politico would never write about me. But if they did, they would take my comments out of context, because that's what they do. All right, so I've got a little bit of background on this case that the Supreme Court is arguing right now, and it's kind of interesting. There was an initial lawsuit in 2022. It was called Robinson versus Ardoin, or Ardoin. This is the AI readout, the summary of this SCOTUS hearing today. In 2022, a group of black voters, represented in part by plaintiffs including Press Robinson, sued Louisiana over its original congressional map. That map had only one majority black district, even though black voters make up one-third of the state's population. A federal district court found that the 2022 map likely violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act by diluting the voting power of black Louisianans. The court ordered the state to draw a new map. So if you have a majority population, or you have, it's got to be commensurate to the population, the representation. So the new map was drawn, and then a new lawsuit was brought up, Calais versus Landry. In 2024, the Louisiana legislature drew a new map, referred to as SB8, that created a second majority black district. A new group of voters calling themselves non-African American challenged this map in a separate lawsuit, alleging that it was an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. It was created and specifically drawn around black areas in Louisiana to create a black majority district, which is in violation of the Constitution, even though it's complying with the Voting Rights Act. So after the initial challenge to the new map, the state of Louisiana changed its position. This is why it's confusing. They changed their position and joined the plaintiffs in arguing against its own map. The state claimed that any race-based redistricting, even to comply with the Voting Rights Act, was unconstitutional. So now you have, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, the rest of the libs on the Supreme Court arguing for race-based redistricting, gerrymandering. And if that's upheld, well, then it's off to the races for the Democrats as far as the gerrymandering goes in California and Illinois. But if it's shut down and overturned, the Dems are fearing that the GOP is going to pounce and weaponize and seize on this opportunity to eliminate race-based drawn districts and get rid of a bunch of Democrat seats. And a lot of this conversation that's happening in the Supreme Court today takes place around this idea that the black vote is pretty much monolithic, that the black vote is a Democrat vote. And that's not necessarily the case. This is Ketanji Brown Jackson, and she is, Breitbart says she's going full trust me bro mode with Louisiana's Solicitor General Benjamin Aguinaga. This is about a minute 20. Let's hear from Ketanji Brown Jackson, who wants racism in Louisiana. Let's hear it.
I don't understand why your answer to Justice Kagan's question about is this a compelling state interest is no. The answer is obviously yes, that you have an interest in remedying the effects of racial discrimination that we identify using this tool. Whether you go too far in your remedy is another issue, right?
Your Honor, I think step zero in all of these cases, it was certainly step zero in the Robinson litigation, is the plaintiffs came in and said, we want another majority black district.
I thought they came in and said, we are not receiving equal electoral opportunity because our votes are being diluted.
Which is the same way of saying we deserve a second majority.
No, it's not, because that, again, just trust me on this. The second electoral or second district is a remedy that one could offer for a problem that we've identified. And the whole Robinson litigation was about identifying the problem.
Oh, my God, pause this. Is she this daft? She is. She's not hearing what she's saying. She's not hearing that the remedy, the second map that was drawn based on race to include a black majority. It was unconstitutional. But she's arguing that that's just the way it's done around these parts. Go ahead. Keep playing it.
A problem that we've identified, and the whole Robinson litigation was about identifying the problem. Is this really happening? In many, many Section 2 cases, the court says, you're wrong. You're fine. There is not an electoral opportunity being denied to you. Go away. In this case, the court said, I see. I'm looking at the factors. I appreciate what you're saying. You've proven that we have this problem. And so the next question is, how do we go about remedying it?
So basically what Ketanji Brown Jackson wants you to do is tear up the Constitution. We're going with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which is more current. You know, it's more hip. It's more with the times. When there's an obvious conflict here of, okay, well, if they're not represented, then they have to have some sort of representation, and there's got to be a race-based drawing of it's quite the oxymoron. I understand why this was brought to the Supreme Court. This is Ketanji Brown Jackson. You're not going to believe this one. I haven't heard it, but you're not going to believe it. Breitbart says she's comparing black people to disabled people. It sounds like a very, of course, I believe this is Joe Biden's pick because I was around when he picked her. But this is something Joe Biden would say. You know, black people don't know how to use a computer. Ketanji Brown Jackson is saying black people aren't able to vote.
I guess I'm thinking of it, of the fact that remedial action, absent discriminatory intent, is really not a new idea in the civil rights laws. And my kind of paradigmatic example of this is something like the ADA. Congress passed the Americans with Disabilities Act against the backdrop of a world that was generally not accessible to people with disabilities. And so it was discriminatory in effect because these folks were not able to access these buildings. And it didn't matter whether the person who built the building or the person who owned the building intended for them to be exclusionary. That's irrelevant. Congress said the facilities have to be made equally open to people with disabilities if readily possible. I guess I don't understand why that's not what's happening here. The idea in Section 2 is that we are responding to current day manifestations of past and present decisions that disadvantage minorities and make it so that they don't have equal access to the voting system, right? They're disabled. In fact, we use the word disable in Milligan. We say that's a way in which you see that these processes are not equally open.
That was Ketanji Brown Jackson, a Supreme Court justice who literally just said black people are disabled. Do I need to say any more? I'm just going to leave that one at that. I don't have to say anything about that. This is the NAACP lawyer who says the quiet part out loud, that Democrats in the South are still racist. Go ahead.
That's right. And in the state of Louisiana, that analysis was conducted in the Nairn case. And it was clear that regardless of party, white Democrats were not voting for black candidates, whether they were Democrats or not. And we know that there is such a significant chasm between how black and white voters vote in Louisiana that there's no question that even if there is some correlation between race and party, that race is the driving factor.
Can you comment on the Solicitor General's suggestion?
Does that make you think, Ms. Janai Nelson, about the NAACP's tight entanglement with the Democrat Party? Does that make you wonder about anything at all? Do you think that's just relegated to southern states? Do you think maybe that extends to, I don't know, Washington, D.C.? Do you think that extends to New York, Massachusetts? Do you think there are racist Democrats in Virginia? Maybe Abigail Spanberger supporters carrying signs calling for segregation of water fountains again? I think that's a more widespread problem than you lead yourself to believe. We've got more of this. We've got Justice Clarence Thomas absolutely taking this whole argument to the ground on the mat, and also one of the principal deputy solicitor general also pointing out a glaring point here that, again, just completely takes this argument down and boils it down to the root causes here and why this is such a weird case and such a stupid argument to be making for literal segregation on a map. 844-500-4242. Oh, my goodness. You can't make this stuff up. Hey, we've said it before. We'll say it again. Dr. Houghton of Perfect Smiles is a superb architect. When it comes to dentistry, he's the best at what he does. He fixes your teeth, your smile, but what he really does is build the self-confidence of his patients. When you have a smile that you're proud of, it builds confidence in your professional life and your personal life. The better you look, the better you feel, and that helps every aspect of your life, every interaction you have daily. If you're not afraid to smile, every other part of life becomes so much easier. That's why Grace went and got her Invisalign done over at Perfect Smiles. She now feels so much better about her smile. She's not afraid to show her bottom teeth that she thought were crooked, even though nobody could see them. But she got it taken care of. And you know what? That mattered to her. She's happy now, and her self-confidence is overflowing. Have you thought about Perfect Smiles for years but never called? Take the first step towards a renewed sense of self-confidence and visit Dr. Bruce Houghton. Take care of yourself. You deserve it. Call Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. They're conveniently located off Route 3. They've got plenty of parking, and you can reach them at perfectsmiles.com. That's perfectsmiles.com. Change your smile. Change your life. I'm Taylor Cormier, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show, 844-500-4242. So this is Justice Clarence Thomas, and he's speaking with the Louisiana Solicitor General Benjamin Aguinaga about the SB 8 map in Louisiana and how it's completely unconstitutional for a map like this to even exist. Let's just have this cut. It runs about 2 minutes. We'll see how much we get through.
What role did Robinson play in the development of SB 8?
Justice Thomas, Robinson is the only reason SB 8 exists. We fought tooth and nail in the Robinson litigation itself in telling the courts that we did not think the Constitution permitted us to draw a second majority.
Pause it right here. So Robinson is the first lawsuit saying that Louisiana was not represented enough district-wise for black people, so the result of that case led Louisiana to draw another map, SB 8, that was based around majority black population. It was literally gerrymandered with black people in mind. Go ahead.
The Constitution permitted us to draw a second majority black district. As you know, under protest, we drew SB 8 because the threat was that the federal courts were going to do it if we didn't. And that's, I mean, I think that's the best way to conceive of why SB 8 exists. We would never pass SB 8 in the first instance without Robinson, Justice Thomas.
What were the findings in Robinson?
The finding by the middle district in Robinson was that the plaintiffs in this case were likely to show a violation of Section 2, and the likely violation, and I'm using very broad terminology because I do not know what the underlying violation is. I can't articulate that for you, Justice Thomas, because I don't think anybody can. But I think the finding in the district court's mind in that case was that the likelihood of a Section 2 violation meant that a majority black district was required, a second one. And I think that was the bottom line, and when our legislature saw that, we understood the marching order, and that's why you see SB 8 as it exists today.
Just briefly, what were the findings that led to that conclusion?
Well, Your Honor, running through the preconditions and the totality of the circumstances, I mean, I think the totality of the circumstances did most of the work for the Middle District in Robinson. Senate Factor 1, the official history of past discrimination. Justice Thomas, we can never outrun the bad era of poll taxes, of grandfather clauses, of literacy tests. I think we're always going to lose across the board on that kind of analysis. And that's what the Middle District in Robinson focused on, is how bad was Louisiana in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And, you know, add all that together, and at the end you have a vote dilution finding that I don't think is clearly articulable in the way that SFFA requires a finding of discrimination to be specified.
Very interesting. A lot of jargon there. I don't expect you to fully understand it, as I don't fully grasp it. They're talking about several different things. But bottom line is the findings of the first case were vague, but open enough for the state to take action. They couldn't clarify what exactly the violation was, but went ahead anyway under threat of this Joe Biden's America, under threat of federal action, to go ahead and redraw another map based on race. Again, unconstitutional. Very bizarre. Finally, this is Hashim Mupan. He is the Principal Deputy Solicitor General, and he's speaking with Justice Sotomayor, and this is how this unfolded. It just boils this argument down to brass tacks here.
You could control for partisan effect. There was racially polarized voting even within the Democratic Party. That's where Section 2 matters, where you have a reason to think that a racial group is being treated.
Here too, you have proof of that here.
No, you don't. What you have here is that Republicans and Democrats are different. There's
you have some that even white Republicans or white Democrats won't vote for black candidates.
Right, but if these were white Democrats, there's no reason to think they would have a second district. None. And so what is happening here is their argument is because these Democrats happen to be black, they get a second district. If they were all white, we all agree they wouldn't get a second district. That is literally the definition of race subordinating traditional principles.
Wow. That's... So because the black population is majority Democrat, they will get a second district, is what the first case was arguing. It's fascinating. It's twisted. It's interesting. It's confusing. Stay tuned for next week's episode of SCOTUS. We'll be back. Another hour of The Grace Curley Show coming up. Don't go anywhere.